Welcome to the eLaborate Topics podcast, where we focus on lab-specific strategies for medical laboratory professionals. We're proud to be the healthcare detectives that work behind the scenes to get the results needed to influence medical decisions. Let's grow together and jump right into the lab.
Hi, friends, and welcome back to another episode of the eLaborate Topics podcast. We're excited to give you a roundtable this week. So I've got with me my co-host, Tywana Wilson. How's it going, Tywana?
It's going good.
All right.
What about yourself?
We're doing good over here in Texas. For those of you who haven't listened to our podcast before, the eLaborate Topics podcast is a weekly podcast where myself and my co-host offer you weekly shows on topics about leadership and laboratory to help you excel inside and outside of the laboratory. So do us a favor and go ahead and subscribe on any podcast platform or on directimpactbroadcasting.com so you don't miss any of our weekly shows. And this week, we've got a very special guest to our roundtable, Mr. Sean McNair. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me today, Stephanie and Tywana.
No problem. We're excited to get into this show because we're going to be talking about resiliency and self-awareness, which is two major topics that all of us need, especially working in laboratory medicine today. So I'm excited to get right on into it. Sean, as a guest to the show, why don't you start off by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself? Give us a little bit about your background and your journey into your laboratory career.
Absolutely. Well, hello, everyone. Happy Friday from New York City. So I'm Sean McNair, and I am a cytotechnologist by trade. So I'm certified by the ASCP as a cytotechnologist or a cytologist. And I also have my master's degree in public health from CUNY Hunter College. Currently, I am the cytology education coordinator at the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. And I'm also the program director for the advanced certificate in cytotechnology training program at Hunter College. So those are my current professional positions. So a little bit about my lab journey really has been it's been an interesting ride. Initially, after discovering medical laboratory science in general as a career in undergrad, I knew that cytology was the route that I wanted to take. So I got my degree in Albany, New York. And then I began my career at a large private laboratory. So that year, I was so passionate about my newfound joy and job that I had that I wanted to figure out, being from inner city Brooklyn, knowing that many people are not aware of these opportunities, I was looking for a way to figure out how I could spread the word for this opportunity. And I think this is where my introduction to leadership really happened. I was actually the inaugural class of ASCP ambassadors. So the ASCP ambassador program actually began the year, which was my first year of my career. So I gave 10 high school lectures about my career to some of my own high school, as well as other high schools in inner city Brooklyn, excuse me. And after that, I remember a few opportunities coming from that, such as being invited to Hill Day by the ASCP Policy Institute. So being able to go to Capitol Hill and lobby in some of the New York senators' offices. And then later on that year, once I thought everything was over, I thought everything was all done, we were then all flown out to San Francisco for the ASCP meeting that year. And this was year one of my career. So that really just started everything. From there, I just began to continue to look for more opportunities to, you know, excel outside of the technical aspect of our jobs. And I realized that those opportunities weren't always in the building that you worked in. So I began to have an interest in teaching my profession, teaching the passion. So I did that part-time at my alma mater. And then from there, I was able to achieve, you know, the qualifications needed for my current position at Sloan Kettering. So that's a little bit about me. I am involved also in numerous committees now. I do lots of committee work I am the chair of the AACP co-chair of the AACP Cytopath Committee. I'm the chair of the cell committee. I am also on the CPRC, which is the Cytotechnology Program Review Committee. So I am part of the committee, which now creates the educational standards for the profession. So this is kind of where that committee work has kind of, you know, just continued to evolve and allow me to be at the table of many, many decisions in our profession. So yeah, that's a little bit about me. And also in 2017, I was named the ASCP 40 under 40 as well. And I think that that was year 3 or 4 of that program as well. So it's a little bit about me.
Well, you have had quite the career. Congratulations on the 40 under 40. I recently got that this year for 2022.
Amazing.
I do want to ask you though, it's a two-part question. You chose the field of cytology. What do you like most about that field? But then also you've taken it to the next level. It sounds like you're not just, you know, working on the bench, or you previously didn't just work on the bench, but you are so involved in these national organizations and ASCP and doing all these things. So what motivates you to be the chair of the cell committee, to be the co-chair of the, you know, of your profession's committee and ASCP, you know, what motivates you to really leave an indelible mark on cytology, you know, in laboratory medicine for your legacy?
Yeah, I think that there was a passion in the field, which obviously came from understanding that what I did had impact. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, everyone who works in the lab always has a story of a patient, you know, or a case or something which happens, which says, wow, this really matters. So in the first few years, those stories started to pile up very fast. And I think you realize, and, you know, and also the mistakes pile up fast as well, right? The lessons learned, et cetera, et cetera. But as those stories started to accumulate, I realized that I wanted to have an impact beyond just this is a job. That's always been my personal goal. I wanted to do my job to the highest level, but I also wanted to try to learn how to do impactful work that's not necessarily seen, but it's felt. And that's really what's motivated me and will continue to motivate me to pursue all of these other opportunities. And would you mind repeating the second part of your question just so I can really answer that directly?
I just wanted to know, what do you like most about your field?
Oh, that's easy. Oh, yeah. The answer on that one is, as I always tell people students ask me this, potential students ask me, you see what you learn. Mm-hmm. I'm a visual learner. Mm-hmm. So my weapon of choice is the microscope, mm-hmm. right? So the microscope allows me to take very complex concepts. You look at the slide and you say, oh, that's it. You know, and that's all they're saying. And then you actually can say, okay, I can see what I'm learning. And I think that that visual confirmation of what you're reading, it's kind of like a read and react. So read and react, see it, read it, see it, read it, see it. And then you start to accumulate knowledge and have the confidence that you're able to apply. Mm-hmm. The other thing about what I like about cytology and medical lab science in general is that it's not knowledge, it's applied knowledge, which is very different, right? So I believe in terms of teaching, this field is representative of what education should be, right? And I think that education, the switch that students make is that, hey, I'm not asking you guys to just spit it back at me anymore. That's like level one of education, right? Level one is saying, can you memorize the facts and can you give them back? But the higher levels and what we need in all facets of life is, can you apply what you know to different scenarios and still come up with the right conclusions, even when the scenarios are different? And that's every patient, different scenario, every lab, different scenario, you know, and we can, you know, expand on that. So I believe that really it's kind of helped to like rethink how I educate myself, not only in the laboratory, but in all facets of life. So that's really why I love it.
And when you think about the statement that you just made about how you think about how you educate yourself, we tell our listeners on our shows a lot of times that growth is an intentional act. So what are some of the things you do for either personal or professional growth?
Absolutely. So for professional growth, generally what I do is there's a couple of things. Practice self-awareness, take risk, forgive, and then also incorporate what I've learned into the long term. So the first thing that I've learned is in terms of professional growth, I think taking risk is really something that is big, especially in a field which is so regulated and has so many reasons for you to not take risk, because literally just follow the standards. Mm-hmm. Just follow the standards, mm-hmm. right? And I think that there's a track for, those who are really, really, really good at that and building on that. And then there's the other side where it's like, there's a potential here, but we don't quite see where it lies. So I think taking risk has been a huge thing, which is to say, well, I'm going to try to follow a path that doesn't have this regimented, very, very technically oriented, pathway, but I'm going to follow it anyway. So that was a risk, right? I wasn't trying to be the typical lab manager, lab supervisor, et cetera, et cetera, which literally the steps are very clear. You become really good at your job, you get the experience, you learn the regulatory guidelines, and you make those professional connections. I think forgiving is really important. I think early on in any enthusiastic person's career, I think the first mistakes, and particularly in cytology, like we are all lab tests are subject to error, but there is no automation in cytology because I am the analyte. So I am the analyte. There is no, digital assistance in front of us to make our interpretations and decisions. So in those moments when you make your first mistakes, I still remember them, that feeling of, oh my goodness, I am human. I am human. I am not a robot. And, that feeling of guilt that really gets you. I think once you work past that and you work past that frustration, I think that if you can take those things, forgive yourself, and then turn those mistakes into a part of your story, don't omit them. Don't omit them, because if you omit them, then you're going to paint a picture for the next person, particularly in teaching world, that learning is linear. Just be there and you'll automatically be perfect, And I don't believe that that's necessarily true. It's more like the squiggly line where you're going to fall and you're going to have to get up. And part of it is forgiving yourself. And the other thing with forgiveness is that I think it's important to learn how to look at yourself with a mirror and objectively, and to say, in terms of physical stuff, we wake up in the morning, we look at ourselves and we say, ooh, you know what I mean? We're like, I don't know. But are we able to do the same thing in our professional lives? Do we say, hey, today wasn't my best day, or today is an okay day, or today I feel like I'm taking over the world, or today I feel like, I'm motivated, So do we look at ourselves in that mirror? And then when things happen also, do we look at ourselves in the mirror and say, if I was looking at this through a mirror, or if I was outside looking in, what's my real view on my role in my professional development and my growth? So luckily I've been able to have people to help me do that. And I think that those are some of the keys for the professional growth. And personal growth really follows, to me, the same mantra. I think it's the same, to be honest, it's really almost identical, particularly now, generationally. We're part of a generation and probably younger generations where we do like to kind of be in line, professional and personal, kind of have a little more blurry line now. And I think that for my personal growth, those same things really apply. Reflect, forgive, take risk, cultivate relationships, use a mirror. Yeah. So
Wow, you really mentioned some great points, and I want to really dive into that a little bit deeper, especially as I think about resiliency. But before I get into that, I'm just curious, how did you get into your pathway of cytology? Or let me take a step back and think about this, because as you know, that we have a major shortage in all areas of the laboratory. And I sit on a committee, a workforce committee, and one of the things that comes up as we have people that's in cytology or histology is, how did you get into that pathway? How does somebody else get into that pathway? Like you mentioned before, mm-hmm. yes, it's the pathway to lab supervisor or team leader or manager are clear, right? But say cytology, it maybe isn't as clear. Is it an accidental thing? What if I've been a tech for 5 years and now I'm interested in getting into cytology?
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. I think so. My own personal introduction into cytology was by accident. I happened to be lucky to be in class, right? And the person who ended up being my program director for my program was recruiting through a giant evolutionary bio class. So she said, I'm going to sit in front of an evolutionary bio class of 100 people, and I'm going to talk about this field. It happened to catch my attention, and I jotted it down. And then I said, when I get back to my room in undergrad, I'm going to Google that and get some information. So unfortunately, I get frustrated that people are finding out about medical laboratory science by accident, obviously, right? I think that's part of the problem, right? And in terms of that technologist route, what I'm finding, there is a very nice solution to this issue. I think as you two know, because you are medical laboratory scientists, right? So, and I'm a cytotechnologist. So you guys do your work in the CP side of things, clinical pathology lab. I do my work in the anatomic pathology lab. I think this is where the weakness of silos come in. I think when, you know, one part of the lab is in another part of town and the other part of another part of the lab is in another part of town in a basement, and the two parts of the lab are only talking when necessary, there isn't this understanding that there's another side to the lab that you may find interest in. Recently, we've had a couple of people who are technicians who have happened to rotate through our lab. And we also had a histotechnologist who had a partnership with our institution, and he rotated through every department in our lab. Then there's someone who worked on the microbial side. So she works in micro. And what happened was, in cytology, there'd be a few microorganisms, which we'd be a little, you know, not sure about, you know, is this really Trichomonas? Is, you know what I mean, et cetera, et cetera. And her laboratory realized, you really like looking under the microscope. And essentially the laboratory said, would you mind doing, you know, cytology? We'll pay for you to go to the program. And she'll be enrolling this year. So I think that those are I think the biggest thing is the strict delineation between AP and CP, where I think the bulk of the workforce of the medical laboratory science field ends up, you know, in one side, and then on the other side, it's just this unknown, don't know what happens in the basement. So we are short all the time. And I think that there's so much ability. We've actually had a few people who like hematology and blood banking. So particularly hematology, because of the evaluation of cells, right? So they accidentally learn about cytotechnology. So we've had two hematology medical laboratory science people. So now they're double certified. So they're MLS and CT. So not only do they have opportunities, but they can work wherever, whenever they want.
I think that is so interesting, because we've said it so many times on our show, and I think it's just a fun question we ask our guests now, which is, did you accidentally fall into this profession, or is it something you sought out? And I've only met one person in our over 100 episodes that sought out this career. Everybody else passed by a random table during the career week or stumbled upon it somewhere in undergrad. So I think I agree with what you're saying, that that is a problem, that everybody who comes in this field comes in by accident. And to your point, I think once we get in, we have to understand that the workforce problem is everybody's problem. So I love what you said about, you know, the laboratory being mindful of texts that show either a special interest or a special gift in a certain direction, and then offering them other opportunities, because sometimes we don't do that. That micro supervisor could have said, "Ooh, she likes the microscope, but I'm shorthanded, so bad." You know?
They're only thinking about themselves in that moment.
Yeah, I know you're a hematology and you can do a really good diff, but I don't need another vacancy, so.
Exactly. Well, what do you think, Tyrone? Interestingly enough, we had another person who was an accessioner. So they weren't even on the tech level. And, you know, they utilized the benefit of their job being able to pay for the program, worked at night because, once again, it's accessioning, so they're able to be a little bit more flexible, completed my program during the day. And the HR at her institution is just celebrating. They're like jumping, having a party because they were able to transfer her position to a cytotech now. So she's like, they're like, we didn't have to recruit. We would have failed, mm-hmm. but we were able to transform you into what we needed, you know? So I think that we just have to be more innovative.
Right.
Right. I think that's awesome when that works out. And Sean, you said it so beautiful. You said it that, you know, figuring out what's your instrument of choice. And if you are one that really likes microscopes, really tapping into that and figuring out all of those different areas in which you would use a microscope. One of my colleagues, and he's in histology, and that was a question that I asked him, like, how do you get people into that pathway? He said, well, a lot of people who do really good in hematology or flow cytometry make a good transition. So sometimes as leaders, we have to not just look at somebody's potential to move into a team leader or supervisor, but what other skills do they have and what could be a transition for that? He said, so we really look at people in that that do well in hematology because they tend to do well in histology or flow cytometry. I was like, oh. And you said that similar thing. So I think that's a great way for us to look when we are making pivots for our team member. Mm-hmm.
I think also too, think about that on an institutional level, right? Like, I know it's altruistic, but you have one choice: lose them interdepartmentally, or lose them out of the institution. Choose one, right?
Right.
Yeah. Honestly, so. I think you got to think about that forest a little differently.
Absolutely. Sean, being able to manage pressure and adversity in the scope of laboratory medicine really depends on how we develop ourselves and being able to deal with those setbacks and change. And you talked a little bit about your professional and personal journey and what you do for growth. So I'm curious as to how has resiliency and being adaptable to change helped you in your career?
So the first thing I'll answer is the resiliency part. I think that without resiliency is the backbone of the story, right? So I'm a teacher and I've learned that as a teacher, there's really a two-pronged job. You're not just transferring facts, right? Like, I think that that's a two-way dance between you and your student to kind of help incorporate those facts. But really, I've learned that because my particular profession is all about making interpretations and using nuanced details to come up with interpretations, and also having high degrees of difficulty there, the first thing that happens with students is that they really get down on themselves when they are wrong. And also, the training, I work at one of the most prestigious institutions in America, right? So Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. And I believe that just the storied history and, you know, the all of the work, the commercials that everyone sees every day about our institution, I think it becomes very, 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 very difficult once you make a mistake, because you ask yourself, do I belong here? You know, and for me, resiliency really is the ability to say that I've been there. I've made these same mistakes. I'm teaching these mistakes. And I am also giving you the message that you may not see it at this moment, but there will be another day, right? There will be another day, and you will be able to, this is why you learn. We have to embrace that, you know, that aura of perfection, particularly if you have like a student who has like a 3.9 GPA and they've come in with all these awards and they've just been said that you are the perfect student. And then you come to our profession and, you know, medicine and what we have to do, diagnostics is a little bit more tricky, right? It's a bit more tricky in all realms, and complex. And so I think that resiliency really, really turns into the story. And in terms of the adaptability, I think the adaptability essentially is an acceptance of the inevitable, change, lack of comfort, right? There is, we may not want changes in our professions. I mean, there are changes that we are fighting against and fighting for, every one of us, right? Mm-hmm. But I believe that adaptability says that no matter where that change lies, it is going to happen. So it actually gives you a chance to prepare for the change before it happens, as opposed to being a victim of the change. You know, so I think that that's really important. And I think that's helped me in my career as well, because it's also made me understand that there will be certain aspects of my career that I know, and that there will be certain turns that I make where I did not know what that road looked like. I didn't know what that challenge would look like. I didn't know what that success would look like. I didn't know what that mistake would look like, or I didn't know what that opportunity would look like. And through each step of my career, and this is why I mentioned the AACP Ambassador Program, because the AACP Ambassador Program didn't have listed on the website that you're going to the White House, we're sending you to San Francisco. Those are things that happened because I was at the table, being so willing to volunteer and just be more and do more, that in the works, it's like, hey, we wanted to honor these people. So these rewards came, and I'm realizing that, hey, you have to go around the corner of the alley to see what's in the alley. You never know, right? So I think that's where the adaptability, that's where that really came. And just understanding that sometimes you might not like what you see, and then sometimes you will find something that is not written in your, is not presented in front of you.
Right. And with that, you have to be flexible. And as you work with your students, what kind of tips and tricks and tactics do you give your students around being flexible and navigating their careers?
Yeah, I think that really a lot of that is agency. It starts really being flexibility, actually starts with accountability. Things don't just happen to us. We are involved in what happens to us. We play a role, right? So the first thing with flexibility is to say that, wait a second, I have some sort of input, or I have some sort of agency in what happens in my career, right? So if I decide that I'm not going to have any flexibility, now change happens around me, but I'm not reacting to the change. I'm not adjusting to the change. I'm not adjusting to new trends. I'm not adjusting to these things. So I get left in the dust because my feet are in the mud, right? My feet are in the mud. I'm not moving. I am not adjusting, I'm not adopting, I'm not evolving, right? But flexibility allows for movement. It's kind of like weightlifting, right? You don't lift without stretching, right? So you've got to stretch. You've got to make sure that those muscles are able to handle that heavy weight you're going to take on. And I do weightlift as a hobby. So I know that if you don't stretch and you decide that I'm going to try to take on a huge weight, your body is not going to like you. Professional development is the same way. If you're not flexible, if you're not stretchy, if you're not able to say, well, this may go this way and I can do that. Or this situation may go this way and I can also adjust to that. I think that you won't be able to take the weight of subtle or huge shifts from what you see as the way your career should develop.
I have a very interesting question off of the heels of that. When we talk about being flexible and changing, and you talked about new trends and adapting and evolving. And one of the most interesting evolving topics in not only laboratory medicine, but in healthcare, I think in general, because I think all of healthcare could look at this and, as a weakness, is DE&I, or diversity, equity, and inclusion. So I wonder, where does all of these things that we're talking about, you know, resiliency, adaptability, being flexible so we can handle the weight of change, where does that intersect for you with DE&I, and how do you address that with your students?
Well, DE&I really, I mean, is something that has evolved, and it is, I think that resiliency intersects, it's the engine. It's the engine for the initiative. I think that us three can say candidly that these initiatives can make us tired for reasons that are outside of the scope of this podcast at the moment, right? We can be very tired of talking and hearing about this without the real, you know, without really seeing, hey, this needs to move forward a little bit, right? So, and I know that, like I said, I've been personally dealing with, you know, a lot of this within my own workplace. And I think that that resiliency says that, hey, this may not go in the direction that you think it's going to go. There may be some surprises along the way, but I have to be flexible and make some adjustments to my approach and my interpretation of what's going on so that we can still move forward, right? So I guess I'm thinking like the game Pac-Man, right? Where Pac-Man doesn't go in a straight line. Right. He goes up, he goes left, he goes right. Sometimes you go back and then you go back up. But if you are really good at the game, somehow you're going to get to that, you know, to that end point. So, but it's very, very frustrating. So I think that resiliency really, really, really is the engine here. And I think it's really the, that's really where the intersectionality is there.
I agree with you because, like you said, it can get frustrating at times. And when you're in these conversations, there's just such an array of tenure for individuals in our profession that you have to be resilient in your stance in the conversation. That society is evolving, that healthcare is evolving. And if we can't look around and make sure that we have as much representation as possible and that the people that are represented feel included in the conversations or feel comfortable and open to bringing their ideas and their entire self to work, then the issues that we talked about in the beginning of this episode of you know, workforce, you know, issues and all those things, they will continue. So it's up to us to continue to be nimble and continue to be resilient in those conversations.
Stephanie, can I bounce off that real quick?
Sure, go ahead.
I wanted to say that with resiliency as well is also resiliency of approach, right? I think that the one thing about this something initiative like this is that it is, there can be some pushback with this, right? So, and that pushback can be very fierce, but in my opinion, you can't fight you can't fight fierce pushback with soft pushback, because then you're, guess what? One, the inertia of one is going to counteract whatever inertia you have. So resiliency is the force behind saying, I'm rooted, you can't move me, I will move forward even if you try to push me backwards. And I know that my approach is going to be very, very, you know, this is going to be very new to you, but guess what? I'm resilient and I've really thought about why this is important. My why is stronger than your forces to push me back, right? Mm-hmm. So my why is so important. That's that engine, right? It makes me resilient. I know why this is important, and I'm going to use that and to fight whatever pushback I get. And that, you know, I think that's super important.
Speaking of you knowing what your why is, I'm going to ask you, what is your why? What is your why for, you know, the innovation, the resiliency? When you mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, you said, you know, I take risks. And I think me and Taiwan, you know, looked at each other and said, I have not heard a lab person take risk in the labs. How can you take risk? You had the SOP right there. What are you doing?
Exactly. How do you do that?
Right. So what is your why for your mentality with your career path?
Part of it is personal, and I'll be very, and I'll share it. I'll share that personal thing. I'm from inner city Brooklyn. All right. So I am from the hood. Okay. Let's be very clear. And I think that my whole stance has been, my why is because for everyone who contributed to fight to get me to where I am, for me to get here and be comfortable when there is so much more beyond me is just not okay. It's not okay with me. That is my engine. You know, I think my grandparents were sharecroppers in Jim Crow South, right? And, you know, they tell me what they went through, and I look and I go into the workplace and say, I only have to deal with this, and they had to deal with that. So I better get my butt into work and work hard and navigate through this and figure out how to learn the tools, because they never even had the opportunity to have our challenges. The problems that we have and the problems that I deal with, they wished they had those problems. You know what I mean? And I'm like, nope, yep, they're problems. But once again, I ask myself, what kind of problems am I having? I'm a well-compensated, successful employee who is trying to pave the way for the next generation. And that's what they were doing out of worse circumstances, far worse circumstances than what I have. And I think that really that's my why. That's like the core of my why, because I look backwards and I'm like, you know how many people would swap places with me? My entire family would swap places with me. Oh, you only have those problems? That's it? That's all you got? I mean, we had a whole different set of problems, and I don't have to experience those, you know? So I think really that's the big why.
Wow, that was awesome. And I wish we had more time to continue the discussion, but of course, our time today is coming to a close. But I have to say this, I am super grateful for you. And so for those that are listening to this, of course, it's an audio podcast, but Sean is an African-American male, and it made me think. I had somebody reach out to me and say that they had never saw an African-American male in the lab in leadership. And so they're out there, and their name is Sean. So I'm grateful for you for what you do, and you can hear it in your voice. You can hear the excitement, that you still have that excitement and energy. So I'm grateful that you're working with our students. I'm grateful that you're serving on all of these committees, and you're being resilient, and you're being a voice for those who may not have that opportunity. So I just want to say thank you for just being you. I know it sounds cliche, but thank you for just being you on that part, because of you, somebody is going to look and say, you know what? Sean did it, and so can I. So thank you so much for that. And so as we get ready to close up, we always like to leave our listeners with a tip or two. So what would your tips be for those listeners out there so that they can excel inside and outside of the lab?
Absolutely. My biggest tip is this. Technical skills are great. They'll keep you employed. They'll keep you paid. Soft skills build your career. All right. That's it. And you have to ask yourself, what do you want? To build a career or to keep a job? And I think those two are very different things. Use this podcast, work on decision making, communication, self-awareness, creativity, storytelling, developing emotional intelligence, learning to connect the dots on a larger scale, understanding that the small changes that happen in your lab can be indicative of something bigger. Go out and learn it, right? And then also practice grit, which is picking goals, practicing them every day, being consistent, and maintain that motivation.
Well, all right. I mean, you said it all. And I think that was awesome. So how can the listeners get and stay connected with you? Because somebody, even if they only caught this last 2 minutes, what you just said, they could have spent a whole semester in school trying to figure out. So how can they get connected with you?
Absolutely. So I usually do my cytology and lab leadership antics on my Twitter page, which is SMcNair0328. So you can find me at Twitter, or you can find me on LinkedIn at Sean McNair from Memorial Sloan Kettering. So those are the best ways to find me.
Awesome. Lab folks, as we have said it before, you need to be on Twitter, you need to be on LinkedIn, and when you get on those platforms, make sure that you reach out to Sean and follow his, as he said, his antics of things that he's putting out there. So thank you again, Sean, for coming into the studio with us and sharing all of your wisdom and your excitement. And it was just an honor to have you.
Thank you. And thanks again to Stephanie for connecting me.
So thank you so much, listener audience, for tuning in to this episode of Elaborate Topics Podcast. As we always say, don't be greedy. Share this information out. Share it with a friend. Share it with a colleague. You can go back and check out over 100 episodes of this podcast. So go ahead, check it out on directimpactbroadcasting.com or your favorite podcast platform. And until next time, my friends, I hope you have an amazing day.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Elaborate Topics, where your hosts discussed relevant strategies for laboratory professionals. Please subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast platform and listen to us on directimpactbroadcasting.com. Stay tuned for another episode with information you can use to excel in your laboratory career.